What else is going on in the community? You're African American. Can you go back to your earliest recollection of not being treated as everyone else was treated?
You know, I remember reading a book by Clifton Talbot, and I was so happy with the way he handled that question of how we grew up. I agree with him 100% that our families were able somehow to keep us covered and shielded so much from the brunt of the terrible racism. And on the other hand, as an adult, I realized that there were some good people in all cultures. So we didn't get quite as much. I know some things happened. As a matter of fact, my uncle had to finally leave Hernando, Mississippi, is where they, my aunt and my uncle live, just a little bit south of Nesbitt. He had to finally leave because he had a verbal altercation with the man that owned the dairy farm where he worked. And they threatened to kill him. So he had to leave and finally move to Memphis. That was the latter thing. But in spite of all of that, I didn't really notice the severe racism in the sense of people overtly saying ugly things to you just because. I did know that we could not drink from certain fountains or we couldn't go to certain bathrooms. There were so many things that we couldn't do. And you couldn't say certain things. I had an instance, I think probably 9 or 10 years old, and I had learned something from my teacher, which was, if you're talking to someone, you say, yes, Miss So-and-so, or no, Miss So-and-so. And don't say yes-um. Don't say that yes-um thing that you're saying. So I learned it, and I wanted to go and practice it. So I was in Mississippi and went into this little drugstore where we went all the time to get ice cream. I got an ice cream cone, and I think the lady said something to me, and I said, yes, and she immediately got my aunt and told her that I need to be disciplined because I was sassing her because I did not say, yes, ma'am, miss, whatever her name was. My aunt told me, she said, you cannot do that. You get in trouble, you know, and she scolded me for not. And I told her, my teacher told me, she said, I don't care what your teacher said. You cannot do this. You get us all in trouble. So that was one incident as a child that I realized that something needed to change. I just don't understand this. My teacher told me I could do this, and this seemed like the right thing to do. But as I grew, there were small, little minor incidents where I just thought it was ridiculous, you know, what we were having to do. We could not try on shoes. If we went to the store, we had to get our feet measured with a string and bring back our shoes if they fit. Good luck. But if they didn't, too bad. Give them to your next one in the line. Or if you went to the dentist's office, there was a small little room where you had to go, or the doctor's office. And those things I remember as being just, I thought they were dumb. This just doesn't make sense at all. Or if you get on the bus, you have to put your money in and then walk around and go in the back door so you can be in the back and sit. Now that makes no sense at all to me. And as a teenager, that's when many of the movements started. I was happy to see that and to be a part of that part of our country growing, because that's the way I look at it now. We could not continue like that, you know, being, how do you say that, degraded or treated in that manner. So it's amazing that someone was given the idea of how to fight this in a positive way, as opposed to fighting in a negative sense. What I know as a more mature adult is that good people have to stick together and stand up for what's right. And I think a lot of what happened in the 60s is because good people stood up, not because we want to listen to negative voices, because we need each other. You have something that I need, and that's my goal now. I want what you have that I need, and I want to give you what I have. That way it makes us powerful. And we recognize who the real enemy is, then we know that we're not fighting each other.
When you were told on the bus, you buy your token and then you go to the back door, did it make you want to challenge the authority, or did you come close to it? Probably in high school age is when you experienced
it. Probably high school. As a younger person, we didn't have a lot of that to do because I was in walking distance of my community school. But as a teenager, I chose to ride across town from South Memphis to North Memphis to the school that I wanted to go to. I chose because I had covenanted with myself when I was in third grade and had to leave that school. It was called Manassas High School. I had to leave that school because my parents relocated. And I said, when I get in high school, I will be back and I will graduate from this school. I made that determination. So when I went to ninth grade, I went to the principal and said that I want to come to this school and I'll ride the bus. It was unheard of because everybody went to their neighborhood school. No one did that. His name was Mr. Hobson. He could not imagine anyone having that much school spirit. He said, if you have that much school spirit, then we're going to permit you to come over here. But if you come late one time, out you go.
So then it was public transportation. Mm-hmm,
public transportation. And it cost a nickel, by the way, to ride the bus one way.
You thought this was dumb. You had to buy the token from the driver, and then you'd walk.
Walk around, get to the back. In the back door.
And so I suppose after a while, you just did it. That's the way it is. Yeah. And you kind of forgot about it.
You just did it because that was the way the culture was set up. And that goes for the water fountains and the bathrooms and all of the other things that we were not able to do. You just tolerated it because this is the way our life is right now. I don't know that I ever looked for a better day or anything of that nature until I was in high school about to graduate.
And you graduated when?
1960.